Visit Plain Ridge Park Casino this spring for all the playoff hoops and hockey action and the return of baseball. They've got the biggest screens, the best food and drink, plus they're giving away Penn Cash bonuses and prizes to Penn Play Rewards members. Not a member? Join today by downloading and registering for the Penn Play app from the App Store. Unlock all the fun, including a chance to win up to $2,000 in Penn Cash. All this and more. Make Plain Ridge Park Casino your spring sports viewing headquarters. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. Live chat at GameSenseMA.com. Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or GamblingHelplineMA.org.
Get the app. Get the Sports Hub. Get Toucher and Rich. Download the Sports Hub app today.
Hi, Ryan Johnston and Mike Flynn in for Toucher and Rich. All right, so as we were just telling you, Kevin Spacey, who's been essentially wiped out of the public consciousness here for the last year plus, suddenly reemerges on Christmas Eve with a video that he put out himself. It's called Let Me Be Frank. Again, he's playing essentially the Frank Underwood character. He's speaking about himself in the third person while playing another character. And, I mean, we'll let the audio speak for itself here. We'll stop this as it goes.
I know what you want. Oh, sure, they may have tried to separate
us. Can we stop for just a second? I know what you want. That's the way we're going to start this.
Well,
I mean, that, like, you are a guy who has been given multiple allegations of sexual harassment, sexual assault, and you're going to start with, in a creepiest voice possible, I know what you want.
How unaware, though, is this guy? Like, listen, if you're accused of something and you're innocent, right? If you want to have your say, that's fine. But holy cow. Like, you're actually going to play a character that, by the way, you used your power.
Well, I will say
to
this.
Manipulate people
the
and
character,
kill people.
The character of Frank Underwood, far more popular than the person Kevin Spacey.
Maybe that is
so,
true.
So, you know, like, I.
No, but what you're accused of is what your character in the show did multiple times. Oh, and by the way, you've killed people with that character.
Right.
And that's how you're going to address the allegations in this character?
We'll get to that, because some of the things he says in here are just, he seems to be having a difficult time separating reality from fiction.
I know what you want. Oh, sure, they may have tried to separate us, but what we have is too strong. It's too powerful. I mean, after all, we shared everything, you and I. I told you my deepest, darkest secrets. I showed you exactly what people are capable of. I shocked you with my honesty, but mostly I challenged you and made you think. And you trusted me, even though you knew you shouldn't.
I mean, again, I don't feel like this is helping the case so far. Talking about what a horrible human being your character is, and saying you trusted me and I, you know, my shocking behavior and all that. Like, yeah, you're not making me feel real warm and fuzzy here on Christmas Eve.
Well, the whole point, right? Say it gets adjudicated and he gets off. It gets about public opinion for him, right?
You're not coming back from this.
No, but I mean, this is how you respond to it, which tells me maybe he has lost touch with reality, meaning he's so out of whack that the rationale to come in as Frank Underwood to explain yourself. Now, maybe he doesn't have a support system. Maybe this is what happens when the guy doesn't have his PR people in place.
Maybe.
This could have been done, like, maybe this idea came about, like,
just
2 years
hires
ago.
Hires a crew, but yeah, like, people around him are telling him, don't do it, don't do it. He's like, well, you know what, I got money. I'm just going to hire a crew to come in and shoot this, and, you know, I'll put it out myself.
And you trusted me, even though you knew you shouldn't. So we're not done, no matter what anyone says. And besides, I know what you want. You want me back. Of course, some believed everything and have just been waiting with bated breath to hear me confess it all. They're just dying to have me declare that everything said is true and that I got what I deserved.
Which person is he right now? Because you know, is he talking about Frank Underwood getting impeached? Or is he talking about Kevin Spacey getting, you know, getting taken to court? Because, like, which guy are we hoping is going to get what he deserves?
So I guess, was this in the can that once this indictment come down, he was going to release this? Because it just happened a couple days ago.
Right. They just announced it, like, just, yeah, they announced right. it right before this video. I don't know. I mean, is that a coincidence?
But he just knew, like, hey, if this goes down, I got a perfect rebuttal for this. I'm going to dress up.
I mean, it was like a Christmas-themed video, so, you know, but he, you know, maybe he was planning for weeks to put this out on Christmas Eve, and it just so happened they announced his indictment the other day.
Clear that everything said is true and that I got what I deserved. Wouldn't that be easy if it was all so simple? Only you and I both know it's never that simple, not in politics and not in life. But you wouldn't believe the worst without evidence, would you? You wouldn't rush to judgments without facts, would you? Did you? No, not you.
The Southern accent is making it more creepy, I think.
It is, but if you watch the video, it's a hell of an acting job, though. Holy cow, Spacey.
Well, he believes the words.
He's got acting jobs.
He wrote this himself, I assume.
Dude, the guy's cutting a roast.
Yeah.
And it's like he's got an apron on.
I don't think he's really cutting the roast. They don't actually show you the roast.
Well,
he's just kind of miming the motion of it.
Listen, I'm not in the PR business, and I've never been accused of something like that. But, geez, like, how about, like, head down, hat in hand. Like,
radio silence.
Radio silence is probably the best thing.
Well, that's what he's done for over a year. It's like, just disappear. No social media, no appearances, just go. Look, I mean, Kevin Spacey has made enough money in his career. Just go away.
Yeah, but
just go away.
But he is an actor, right?
I understand.
It's about working.
It's about ego. It's not about working. It's about the ego of being out of the public eye.
Yes.
No, not you. You're smarter than that. Anyway, all this presumption made for such an unsatisfying ending. And to think it could have been such a memorable send-off. I mean, if you and I have learned nothing else these past years, it's that in life and art, nothing should be off the table. We weren't afraid, not of what we said, and not of what we did, and we're still not afraid.
Okay, so now, in life and art, nothing should be off the table. Except, you know, grabbing guys' junk in a bar, you know, like sexually assaulting people on a movie set. Yeah, I'm guessing in life and art, that maybe should be off the table.
Well, with Spacey, too, it's not like a one-off. Like, one person has this you know, charge or assault.
Right.
I mean, it's multiple people. People on the sets of this guy harassed me constantly. It goes all the way back when, Anthony Rapp's, mid-
It's like
late
30 30s. Years ago.
Yeah, 30 years ago. So it's not like, oh, yeah, some random guy just, you know, or some kid brings this up. But, God, like, how clueless is this guy? Like, not only radio silence is always the way to go, but, I mean, you're doubling down on something. You're acting like a character.
I mean,
you're acting like a character.
Like, any lawyer of course.
Well, this isn't a lawyer
of course,
thing. This is
no,
like
but
some
I'm
sort
saying,
of PR
but it, you always, like, if you feel like you're being wrongfully accused, even. And I'm not saying that he's being wrongfully accused, because there's a lot of people who have said the same things about him. But even if you feel like you're being wrongfully accused, they'll always tell you anyway. Just, you know what? You can't go out and try and publicly defend yourself. Like, because the people that don't believe you aren't going to believe you no matter what you say. You can only make it worse. This video is making it so much worse.
Because I can promise you this. If I didn't pay the price for the things we both know I did do, I'm certainly not going to pay the price for the things I didn't do. Oh, of course, they're going to say I'm being disrespectful, not playing by the rules, like I ever played by anyone's rules before. I never did, and you loved it.
You're not Frank Underwood. I love Frank Underwood, okay? I love Frank, yes. Because I was watching a fictional show about a guy who was stabbing people in the back and, you know, pushing a girl in front of a train. And, yeah, like, yes, I enjoyed that. You know why? Because you didn't actually murder anybody. You didn't actually commit any crime. Because it's a work of fiction, you see. Yes, I love that part of it. Is he telling me I'm supposed to love that he sexually harassed and assaulted people? Is that what he's saying? You know what? I did bad things before, and you loved it. No, your character did bad things before, and yes, I loved you in Usual Suspects. You know what? I don't believe you actually murdered anybody during the making of that film. As far as I know, I think all those people were actors who are still alive.
Like I ever played by anyone's rules before. I never did, and you loved it. Anyhow, despite all the poppycock, the animosity, the headlines, the impeachment without a trial, despite everything, despite even my own death, I feel surprisingly good. And my confidence grows each day that soon enough you will know the full truth. Well, wait a minute. Now that I think of it, you never actually saw me die.
Is he trying to say, like, that, you know, is this like a trailer? Is he, you know, is he trying to revive House of Cards after they've already released their final season and say, oh, you know?
What's that coming back on? Like one of those satellite stations you've never heard of?
Just put it up on YouTube. He's going to pay for it himself, pay for all the production. It'll just be him because none of the other actors are going to work with him. Frank Underwood goes underground.
Yeah, he does everything out of like he's in some like bunker. You know, he was
just releasing these videos.
Oh my God. Kevin Spacey. Holy cow.
Now that I think of it, you never actually saw me die, did you? Conclusions can be so deceiving. Miss me?
Ooh. Man, how creepy is that?
And then he ends it with that. We didn't add that. That's on there. He ends it with that music.
So that's your foray back into the public eye.
Right. That's after over like well over a year. This is the first like public statement you've made, and it's a creepy 3-minute video of you pretending to carve a roast and talking in a fake Southern accent. Oh man. JP, you're up with Johnston and Flynn in for Toucher and Rich.
First of all, Johnston and Flynn, it's good to hear both of you guys back together.
Thanks, buddy.
Again, it makes the mornings worthwhile going to work. He sounds like Colonel Jessup on The Stand and A Few Good Men. Like it's creepy. Who was in the house when he's filming this? But it's like an acting skit. Does he think he's going to get nominated for like, you know, best Southern accent in a home
nominated
movie
for a
category?
Webby?
I like the idea.
He is a little bit like Nicholson in A Few Good Men. Like, you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. It's like, yeah, you love me. You know you love me. Like, Kevin, you realize in the context of what you're talking about here, that might not be the best choice of words.
I mean, the way to go about it, right? And to like, you're right. You can never, in the court of public opinion, try to defend yourself because it's not going to matter. So the lawyer part of it, but God, just like have a little, I mean, which tells me the guy's like sociopath, like to think that's logical, right? That people are like, hey, listen, my character was a murderer, a crook. So in real life, yeah, I may be like that too. Not a murderer that we know of. So yeah, you should like me because my character in the show. You like that guy, so why wouldn't you like me? Like, he actually sat down and said, oh, this would be a great idea. I'll try to get, you know, the people that love my show, House of Cards, to get me back in the business. I mean, because why else would you do it? To try to get in good graces of, what, producers and directors and all that kind of stuff? Like, what's the end game for that? That has to be what it is.
The end game is he wants to work again, which is just not going to happen. By the way, you want to have some fun? Just go to Kevin Spacey's Twitter, and if you like a good GIF or a meme, the replies to this video are for you. You can spend hours. All right, we'll talk a little Celtics. Brian Robb of The Athletic is going to join us coming up next, or Boston Sports Journal, I'm sorry, 617-779-0985. We'll talk about the game yesterday. And the Celtics, as they move forward in their season, are they now almost fully healthy? Are they the team that we hoped they would be? It's Johnston and Flynn in for Toucher and Rich.
Let's do something crazy.
Wake up with Toucher and Rich.
Oh, boy, that's dumb.
Just tell your smart speaker to play 98.5 The Sports Hub.
And a Kyrie, quick three, straight away. No! Got it.
Push Jimmy Butler away. Jimmy Butler went for the okie doke.
His Christmas cup runneth over. Up the right side, Kyrie for three.
No!
Got it.
Mama. Somebody took my Christmas gift. It was Kyrie Irving.
The only guy who's delivered more today had a slay to do it. 40 for Kyrie, and the Celtics lead 118-114.
Ryan Johnston, Mike Flynn in for Toucher and Rich. Matt on Twitter, at Johnston98.5, at Flynn98.5, by the way, if you'd like to tweet us. Wonders if Kevin Spacey is trying to play up his mental instability to and hope for some sort of a plea deal because he's bat bleep crazy. He thinks he's Frank Underwood. Got to let him off. He thinks he's Frank Underwood.
Well, if he takes a stand, just talk like that.
Right? Just go up there with a southern accent?
I mean, you got to be all in.
Like, where's the camera? Like, look around so he can stare into the camera. Brian Robb covers the Boston Celtics for BostonSportsJournal.com. He joins us now on the phone. Morning, B-Rob.
Morning, boys. How are we doing?
Good. You enjoy your Christmas at the Garden yesterday?
Always now. Second year in a row. I don't think we'll be leaving the Garden anytime soon on Christmas Day, so at least it's not the noon game. I'll take the 5:30 instead.
So a little about that game yesterday. The 76ers are a challenge. Just your thoughts on the game overall and Kyrie, taking control of that game really throughout, but especially late in regulation and in overtime, coming up with some big shots.
Yeah, he's kind of taking it to a different level here, Ryan, I feel like, this year, as far as what he's, picking his spots in some of these games. We always knew that Kyrie was an elite scorer, obviously, coming from Cleveland. But now, like last night, he gets the 10 rebounds in addition to the 40 points. The first guy since, I think, 2005, Paul Pierce, to put up a line like that. And clearly, he's giving the Celtics what they need pretty much, and it's changing on a night-to-night basis. He went for 40 last night because no one else on the team outside of Marcus Morris and Jason Tatum could hit a three. But he also got in there, with Baines out, he got it there on the glass, kind of got his hands dirty so that they could, hold their own against the likes of Embiid and Ben Simmons down low. And, he's had, I think, more double-doubles this year than I think he had, all last season right now. And just being able to show that, he can do more than just up the 40 points, he can actually contribute in other facets of the game in a pretty big way, kind of taking that challenge on himself. That's in what's been a roller coaster ride of the season for this team. That's a pretty encouraging development, I think.
B-Rob, since their closed door meeting, the Celtics are 2-0. I mean, they have 13 losses, and to me, that's too much for the schedule that they played. They have this meeting. Who knows how personal it got in their butt. They have won since that, which is always a good thing, right? You don't want to have that meeting and then go for 0-2. But do you notice anything different with the team? Do you notice any extra energy on the court? That kind of stuff after that meeting.
Well, we're just going to call it the airing of grievances now going forward, Flynn, that meeting, based on how Brad Stevens referred to it over the weekend. But you do kind of notice, I mean, the shots, the selfish shots, have not gone away entirely, that's for sure. But you do notice there is a little more, pep in the step of the guys and just how they've interacted with each other on the floor. There's a lot of talk after that meeting about, we need to start, rooting for each other and, starting to, not, kind of hang your heads when things aren't going well for, each other individually. And, you know, Jason Tatum after the game last night kind of talked about how he needs to do better just in terms of, you know, impacting the game when his shot's not going. And he did that as last night wore on, you know, grabbing 10 rebounds of his own on a night he couldn't hit a three. And so we're getting more of that kind of spread out across the roster. And Irving's doing a good job of kind of setting the tone on that front, you know, kind of sacrificing some of his own shots in certain games so he can, you know, set up guys more or, you know, grab more rebounds, make an impact defensively. And so, again, I mean, it's a two-game sample size. There's a long way to go. We saw this again during the eight-game winning streak and then disappeared for a while during those losses to the Suns last week. And so the fact that they're kind of getting back into it now, and we'll find out whether they can sustain that kind of an attitude over a more prolonged stretch.
How much do you think some of the selfishness has to do with the success that they had in the postseason without some of their stars last year?
Yeah, I think that's a huge factor, Ryan. I think all these guys came in, you know, heard the hype this summer, heard, you know, they each, pretty much everyone at some point or another in that postseason last year had a few big breakout games, whether it was Jaylen Brown, Terry Rozier, Jason Tatum, kind of everyone had their moment to step up because obviously, you know, the team needed them to get to the where they got to last year. But now clearly, you know, Tatum is still producing at a pretty high level, but he shouldn't have, you know, a 19-foot jumper with 20 seconds left in the shot clock is no longer as good of a shot as it was when, you know, Kyrie Irving is and Gordon Hayward are on the bench. And then other guys like Rozier and Jaylen Brown have just seen, you know, some regression in their game, and they are, you know, honestly not – we don't know how good they are yet, and they're clearly not able to sustain their play at the level that we saw last year. So I think it's kind of been a dose of reality for those guys to realize that, hey, you know, you don't have the track record yet. You're not the proven all-star yet, so, you know, maybe you shouldn't be taking 15 to 20 shots a game. But I think slowly but surely they're kind of figuring it out. Brad Stevens is figuring out, okay, who can kind of fill the roles we need around Irving – you know, around Tatum, around, you know, Marcus Morris, who's honestly been, you know, the third best player in this team a lot of nights. And, you know, as the more and more those guys kind of try to fill that role around the more proven parts, the better off this team will be.
Do you think that Brown and Rozier are going to be willing to accept those roles? I mean, because really for this team to be good and make a run, I think they need to accept that. And I think if they do, probably they will play better. But do you think where they are in their career and what happened at the end of last season, you think they'll be able to accept those roles?
Yeah, I think they're getting there. And I think Rozier last night, I think, was good. He and Brad Stevens even made a point of saying, you know, how much of an impact he made in that fourth quarter. They couldn't really score that one stretch late before, you know, Irving carried them to the finish line. And Rozier hit a couple of big shots, you know, kind of jump-started them into energy. And there is a pretty big difference in terms of, you know, the trajectory of that bench, you know, whether or not like kind of goes with Rozier to a degree, since he, you know, has the energy and can grab rebounds and push it up the floor. So he's, you know, it's touch and go with him. Jaylen Brown, you know, he just like, I don't know, Flynn, like his 3-point shot right now just is not there, and it hasn't been there for a good, you know, 35 games. So I think for him right now, it's more of a matter, he's starting to, you know, look for that pass a little bit more on his drives, which is good, but, you know, they need him to make that shot for him to be what he can be, and if he's not, then they're probably going to look for other options, especially in crunch time, since, you know, obviously he's playing closer to 15 to 20 minutes a game, since, you know, he has been a liability on that offensive end of the floor at times.
Getting a little closer to the midpoint of the season, and the Celtics are, even with the win yesterday, are in fifth place in the Eastern Conference. They're only four games behind the Raptors, but, you know, behind Philadelphia, behind Indiana, behind Milwaukee. You know, I think there were some people around here that felt like, okay, they're going to be able to walk through the East. What's your opinion on who the real challengers are in the East, and, you know, and what this is going to look like as we get further along in the season?
Yeah, I mean, the two biggest threat, I feel like, Ryan, are Toronto and Milwaukee. this Philadelphia team, you know, Philly and Jimmy Butler, I'm not afraid of if I'm a Celtics fan, because you have, you know, Aaron Baines to kind of combat, and Horford, obviously, to combat and beat up front. Ben Simmons, I mean, the Celtics know how to guard him, and he's never going to take anything outside of the paint. And that just makes their life so much easier in the defensive end. And Jimmy Butler, you know, that's a little bit of a wild card, but he's not really, you know, they did a pretty good job against him last night. You know, Jason Tatum actually played some solid defense on him. And, you know, I think going back to last season, I think the Celtics have won, you know, 7 or 8 of their last 9 matchups against this team. So I don't think, you know, that's the best case scenario for the second round if you're the Celtics. But, you know, as far as the seeding goes, the Celtics need to get up to at least 2 here, because you want to avoid a 4-5 matchup with a team like the Pacers, who, you know, aren't, you know, don't look like too much on paper, but they work hard and they'll grind a good series out of you. And then you want to play a team like Philly in that second round as well, over the likes of Toronto, who, you know, with Kawhi Leonard there, I think they clearly have the highest ceiling. It looks like they're going to get the top seed. The Celtics haven't won in Toronto in a couple of years. So that is, you know, a pretty stiff challenge that certainly gives them the edge right now. And the Bucks, with, you know, the Greek Freak and Milton and a decent bench of shooters, like, I think they're one piece away from, you know, being a true threat. They still need a defensive presence in the middle to put next to Giannis. That's not Brook Lopez, but, you know, if they add one more piece there, then I think that's a pretty scary matchup for the Celtics too.
All right, Brian Robb covers the Celtics for Boston Sports Journal. You need a, I was going to say last-minute Christmas gift, but that's past. But always a good subscription. Maybe you have, like my wife, you have a birthday coming up right after Christmas. You know, you don't know what to do. Well, BostonSportsJournal.com gift subscriptions always available, right?
Absolutely.
Appreciate the time.
All right, thanks, Ray.
Take care. We will continue here on this Wednesday morning, 617-779-0985. If you want to jump in with us, it's Ryan Johnston and Mike Flynn in for Toucher and Rich.
Toucher and Rich. 98.5, the Sports Hub. Make it your home page.
A connection.
98.5thesportshub.com. Watch Toucher and Rich on Twitch. Follow the Sports Hub on Twitch.tv for live shows and reruns. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
.5 The Sports Hub, Ryan Johnston and Mike Flynn with you here on this Wednesday morning in for Toucher and Ridge. 617-779-0985. We talk about this in the AFC East. It's on pretty much an annual basis, but it seems to come up quite a bit. And there's a story out there today about the Miami Dolphins. They're getting ready to fire Mike Tannenbaum, their vice president of football operations. It was reported in the Miami Herald that Dolphins owner Stephen Ross has made the decision to part ways with Mike Tannenbaum. They have not officially announced it yet, but that is going to happen, barring some unexpected circumstance that Tannenbaum is out of a job. However, Mike, favorite part, barring some unexpected circumstance, the owner will keep head coach Adam Gase in place for 2019. And Gase essentially has contractual control of the 53-man roster and reports exclusively to the owner.
Moving forward is what they're saying? Or he has that now?
He has that now. So they're letting Mike Tannenbaum go, who is the vice president of football operations, who apparently does not have final say over the roster, and now they're going to be out there looking for someone to replace him, who they're going to hire, who is not going to be able to pick their own coach and is also not going to have a final say over the 53-man roster. That's a hell of a job. That's like when the Knicks gave Isaiah Thomas a new position, and they said, like, you know, no one will report to him. He will have no official duties. And like, what did Mike Tannenbaum do around the office all day?
I wish I had that job. But that's who you're going to get, a guy that needs a job. There's desperation there. But if you're a GM, okay, if you want to be responsible for a team, right, have that, and I'm sure money's involved there, right? The more money that you make, there's more power that you have. That's part of it. But, like, you want to be part of, like, shaping the team. Whether you keep Gase or not, it should be an option for the new GM. At least interview the guy. Like, you need to be on the same page. Because we've talked about that conflict of interest, right? We always joke around the personnel guys and the head coaches. How you go to ownership and say, well, hey, man, we're doing our job. We're bringing in the players. You can't coach them up or opposite. You know, coach is like, listen, you're giving me – I don't have the personnel around me. How can I do this if you don't bring the right guys in? So it's good to have that team, you know, whether it's, you know, that they're put together, that the GM hires the coach, because they do. They have to have a good relationship. It's hard to have a relationship where you're not on the same page. You don't view – I mean, they could be differing opinions, but generally be on the same page or have some sort of working relationship as opposed to trying to, like, make that work. And we've said it all the time where these teams, the Dolphins, I mean, the Dolphins have done this on numerous occasions.
The Jets have done it on numerous occasions. The Jets are like the poster child for this. It's like they fire the coach, but, you know, the GM – or they fire the GM, but they keep the coach. And then the coach gets fired and the GM stays and he picks the new one. But then a year later, the GM's out and the coach stays again because the coach has, you know, 2 or 3 years left on their contract. I love the fact that how is Adam Gase? I'm not saying he's a bad coach. I mean, but he's in his third year of his first go round as a head coach in the NFL. How does he have contractual control of the roster?
Well, probably when that's something that you give commodity though.
Yeah, but I get it. But you know, he was a coordinator. He was, you know, he has no experience at it. That's usually something that a head coach gets, you know, after they've established themselves for a little while. Like you used to have a falling out with the GM and say, okay, like, you know, you win the power struggle. Now I'm going to bring in my guy to be the GM, and so it's going to be on me. How does Gase get that?
Well, what did McDaniels have in Denver? He had control. He took Tebow.
Oh God.
So, you know, one of these deals, if you want to get your coach and, you know, Gase, what, you know, he was with the Bears and he was with Fox. He's with the Broncos and the Bears. He was like a commodity to bring in here. In his first year, they went 10-6. I mean, they made the playoffs, which for Miami is pretty damn good. It's not like they're making the playoffs every year. So when these coaches, right, get that job, they do have some power. Maybe not, you know, not all the coaches, but I'm sure, like, if there's a coach from college that has success there and wants to jump to the pros, they could get that also. But if you want that guy, you're like, yeah, 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 we'll give you control. But at the end of the day, it doesn't work well. And now he has control, and this is third year in, and they're not any better. So you're stuck with this guy. But I don't think it's crazy. I could see owners doing that. It's not the smartest thing in the world to do. But you'd rather give that to a guy that you've trust. Like John Harbaugh will probably come back to the pros here, potentially.
Jim Harbaugh, sorry.
Yeah. He'll get that power. But
how much,
you know,
boy John Harbaugh, he's Raiders or the Ravens announced their work. They want to extend him now.
Well, I don't know. He may not sign the extension. And there, I think the Broncos may be interested, maybe the college game. But in terms of the Dolphins, though, it's just the classic AFC East. Okay. You now, I guess at the end of the day, does it matter? I mean, if he didn't have any power at all and he was just kind of a voice in the room, you're not losing anybody that looks like helped this team. I guess the guy they should be firing would be Gase. If he's the guy that kind of has control of this roster.
Right.
Like, you're the he's the guy that.
Why are we letting go with a guy who really doesn't have any power? If you're not happy with the direction of your organization, it's not Tannenbaum's fault.
So, if they bring in a Gase guy, then potentially the GM or the team president, I guess, would be the guy. I'm sure he'll have a working relationship, and maybe it'll be better. And, you got to hope this guy is not just a yes man, but maybe it's a better relationship. But, yeah, it would just always seem that when they have an opportunity to, clean things out and start fresh, they keep something along. And they did that with, Philbin was there, and before that, the decisions they make with the GM and the coach. And we see that around the league, though. We saw that, even in Cleveland with Hugh Jackson. His history at the Raiders in Cleveland's like, why is this guy here? Or we see where they potentially may fire a guy like five games into the season. Like, if you're that close to firing him, why even bring him back? So, I mean, if he has no control for Tannenbaum, what's it matter? If Gase really is the guy that had that contractual control, how much did Tannenbaum really help?
Right. By the way, you mentioned Joe Philbin's name. Did you see Aaron Rodgers
wants
to keep
him.
Joe Philbin around? Man.
Well, that's a comfort thing for Aaron Rodgers, because he didn't like McCarthy. He knows Philbin. So it's like, ugh. I got rid of one guy that I don't get along with. Philbin probably is going to cater to Aaron Rodgers more in terms of the offense. So you push for him because you don't know who they're going to bring in. What if they bring in another McCarthy?
Right.
Meaning somebody that doesn't, want to implement stuff that you don't like.
The organization doesn't seem to value Aaron Rodgers' opinion on personnel decisions that much, though. It's part of the reason he's been kind of sour the last couple of years.
It's probably not the best business to base your personnel decisions on individual player, but, if he's your
right.
franchise quarterback, you have to fit pieces around him to be successful.
I mean, you want him to be happy because you've seen what happens this year when he's not happy.
No, you want him happy, but you can't. In football, there's so many moving parts to just – pick and choose.
No,
guys,
it's not the
make...
NBA. You don't let LeBron, you don't let Aaron Rodgers be your GM like LeBron is. 617-779-0985. We'll get into some more things in the NFL coming up. It's Johnston and Flynn here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Games are only half of it.
Mass, you loser.
Toucher and Rich.
When you're that short, it's more than okay to be a dick.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Zolak's the worst.
Ryan Johnston and Mike Flynn in for Toucher and Rich. We were mentioning some of the coaching moves and potential moves. There was a report on Sunday that the Jets are willing to throw a boatload of money at Jim Harbaugh to try to get him to come to New York. The Jets CEO, Christopher Johnson, put out a statement on Monday denying that report, saying, quote, Todd Bowles is our head coach. There's no truth to the report of our interest in Jim Harbaugh. If you're Jim Harbaugh, I mean, you got a decent thing going there in Michigan, obviously. I wonder what, I would assume that at some point he'll want to go back to the NFL.
Yeah.
I don't know if the time is now. But if you're Jim Harbaugh and your name is always going to be among the hot rumored coaches, you basically have your pick of jobs that are going to become available. Would the New York Jets job be of interest to you at all? I mean, Sam Darnold makes it slightly better, but is the New York Jets job going to be anywhere near the top of the list?
Depends what you think of Darnold. Money's going to play a factor. Listen, it is New York, right? And, coaches that win there, it's a good place to win. So, yeah, I think those are always attractive. And the Jets haven't won, and that's a fan base that, like, you know, similar to Cleveland, I'd imagine that if you win, it's pretty memorable. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's a special place to win because they just don't. I mean, the Jets won Super Bowl III, but since then they've, you know what the Jets have been. So yeah, I think it would be attractive. I don't know though. Like, that's a tough place for Harbaugh to leave. Eventually it will happen. But I don't know how the games he'd want to play with it. You know, it's his alma mater. Like Stanford, if he was at Ohio State, if he was at, you know, Alabama, like another school that didn't have that kind of personal attachment. But he seems like he's a mover. You know, you've seen him, you know, from Stanford to San Francisco to Michigan. It would seem like a logical choice. But if you're going to leave Michigan, it needs to be something where you slip right in and it's you're ready to go.
I mean, we were just talking about like total control. Like Harbaugh is going to
well, I think he'd have
he's
total
going
control
to want total
in New York.
Control.
It's not about that, but I'm just
saying.
Well,
but they're not firing Maccagnan. They're going to fire Bowles and they're not going to fire Maccagnan.
They'll fire him
if they need.
Yes.
If Jim Harbaugh's coming in,
well,
Maccagnan's
you, if
going
he's
out.
Your guy, you would. But if you're going to leave Michigan, your alma mater, I mean, that's pretty personal. I mean, I don't like. You don't really want to burn a bridge there. And you can't get pissed off at
well,
a
no,
guy
but
if
it's
he
not
leaves.
Like you're ditching them to go to, you know, go to another school. Like
no.
You're going to the NFL. Like people understand
no,
that.
But you brought Michigan in to change the culture, to bring back Michigan to what it was. And in a way he has a little bit, but he hasn't beaten Ohio State. He hasn't been to a playoff. So he hasn't quite done what he was brought there to do. So whether that's him personally wants to accomplish that goal first, or if he leaves now that, you know, the alumni and the school is like, oh, man, well, you couldn't get it done. It's on you, and now you're bailing on us for a bigger job. Like, that's the only thought. So if you're going to leave, yeah, professionally, it's not like you're right. It's not like he's going to Ohio State or he's going to a Big Ten school or an SEC school. I get it. But, you know, just to jump ship now and go to a pro team, it's got to be the right one. Like, I don't know if the Jets are the way they're built. Like, Cleveland would seem to fit better.
Cleveland has become a job that I would have genuine interest in. Like, Baker Mayfield looks decent. That team, I mean, first of all, does anybody look worse than Hugh Jackson?
Oh,
Hugh Jackson.
No, he looked bad when he was there, though.
Of course he looked bad, but like, you could still fall back on, well, the team just isn't very good because the Browns haven't been very good for a long time. Hugh Jackson leaves, and Greg Williams takes over as the interim coach, which we looked at when they announced that. And said, what are they, nuts? They're going to give this guy the keys to the even for a little bit. That's crazy. They're just rolling off wins, win after win after win. You know, we're in contention for a playoff spot up until last week. So, like, I'd look at that and say, you get a, you know, decent coach in there, that's a playoff team. Hell, if they had a decent kicker in the first couple, you know, first two or three weeks of the season, they're in the playoffs right now. That's not a bad job, Josh. Ask Bill. He probably knows, you know, some good places to go in Cleveland.
Well, I mean, and plus the division is changing, you know, with Pittsburgh and certainly Cincinnati. And potentially the Ravens. Now, the Ravens are playing better now. I just don't know.
But you were saying
Lamar Jackson's game, if that's sustainable. But
and you're also not sure that Harbaugh ends up staying there either.
Yeah. You know, that maybe he recognizes his value and maybe his time there is done. But, yeah, I mean, listen, the AFC East teams we always get back to usually, and I forgot, usually mess things up. And the last time the Dolphins were kind of interested, but then they said no. And I didn't know Ross is like a big donator to Michigan. I don't know.
The owner of Michigan,
yeah, like,
man?
Michigan man. Mm. So I don't know if you'd want to, if you're a big Michigan man, you're not really going to pull. But like how they operate and how they, you know, do business, those owners usually, you know, fumble the football to use a cheesy cliche, you know, pun, but fumble before they even, you know, play games, whether it's, you know, trying to hire Harbaugh before and Sparano was still your coach. I forgot about that one. That was a beaut. He still had a guy under contract. And
well, that seems like I kind of wondered, and in fact, in the New York Post, they're kind of wondering that too, is that is the denial of the Harbaugh rumor just because, you know, Todd Bowles has to coach on Sunday? And
probably,
you know, we're not,
and you should do,
we don't
that.
Want that, I mean, stuff out there before we've even fired the guy.
I mean, Todd Bowles is gone.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a rookie quarterback, you have a guy, like, you could tell there needs to be change. So if John Harbaugh was interested in that job, GM or no GM, coach or no coach, they're getting fired. They will bring him in. Because I think if he comes to New York, I think he could win. Like, he does have a track work record of putting teams together and winning the college and the professional level. He's not a guy that's been at college and never has coached this level. I mean, he played quarterback for how many years, and then and he coached, and he knows the game. So, yeah, the interest is there. I don't care what he says. They just, I mean, out of respect for the coach, that's what you do.
All right, we got to get to Sports Hub headlines. Our final hour here on this Wednesday morning. Ryan Johnston, Mike Flynn in for Toucher and Rich.
Visit Plain Ridge Park Casino this spring for all the playoff hoops and hockey action and the return of baseball. They've got the biggest screens, the best food and drink, plus they're giving away Penn Cash bonuses and prizes to Penn Play Rewards members. Not a member? Join today by downloading and registering for the Penn Play app from the App Store. Unlock all the fun, including a chance to win up to $2,000 in Penn Cash. All this and more. Make Plain Ridge Park Casino your spring sports viewing headquarters. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. Live chat at GameSenseMA.com. Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or Gambling Help MA.org.
There's always a reason for better health, and here's Carlo with his.
My program with Awaken 180 actually started when my daughter was born, and at that time, I was over 300 pounds. I felt I owed it to her to better myself and my family, of course. And I'll never forget, it was my fourth week. I came in, and my goals for that week were not met. And they found the positive in everything, and that was the biggest thing for me. Awaken 180 has provided me confidence, not only in my day-to-day eating, it's my day-to-day role as a father, as a friend. And that's something that for the longest time, I didn't have.
The benefits are endless after losing weight with Awaken 180. Carlo dropped his 84 pounds, and he did it in under 4 months. Scale results, life results, with the solution for weight loss online at awaken180weightloss.com.
Face it, winter can wreak havoc on your parking lot. And the last thing your customers need is to dodge potholes, which might make them dodge your business altogether. Make sure they don't have bumps on the way to your door by calling U.S. Pavement. 1-800-PAVEMENT. Let U.S. Pavement smooth the road to your door. U.S. Pavement has paved the way for successful businesses all over New England since 1985. Call now, and a member of their expert team will evaluate your site and give you a price that won't leave a hole in your budget. Call U.S. Pavement at 1-800-PAVEMENT or visit uspavement.com.